Welcome to the Underground, the Steel City Underground, the black and gold standard for Pittsburgh Steelers coverage. Now, here are your hosts, Joe Kuzma and Brian E. Roach.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Steel City Underground podcast. My name is Joe Kuzma, and look who's here. Finally, inconspicuous by his absence, last Friday? I missed you, Brian.
Someday.
Yeah, one Mr. Brian E. Roach. Hey, we get to bring you back, and we could do part two of the two-parter.
Excellent.
It's like
I always like to do part two.
It's like putting another movie, like a Star Wars movie, in the middle of you're waiting for the sequel. You know what I mean? Like one of those, like the Solo movie or something like that. In the middle, we had a little bit of a break, but now we're back. And you know what? Star Wars is pretty good. It's a pretty good comparison to what we're going to be talking about today. The worst free agent signings of the Kevin Colbert era, and maybe a couple other outliers here. And I don't know. I'm trying to think if you could be, like with Star Wars, the reason I make the comparison with Star Wars is I think you could universally come to a conclusion, Star Wars fans or even casual followers, that the worst character in the Star Wars universe is Jar Jar Binks.
I think that that's I'm not even trying to do a Jar Jar Binks, but I think that's fair to say.
You're just saying, we's it gonna die?
Yeah, there you go. You can say it all you want.
Yeah, you know, it didn't bother me so much, but it is pretty cringeworthy when you go back and look at those films. But equally cringeworthy, you know, I'm trying to think if, you know, we jump into this right away, and is there a unanimous worst free agent signing? Because the one guy that everybody tries to bring up, and by the way, just to rewind this a little bit, this show and the one that preceded it last week with the best signings was inspired by an article by Ed Bouchette, now working with The Athletic. He has an updated one. We are actually speaking, or we're speaking, on the 2019 version that he had mostly publicly available if you were a subscriber to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, or you get X amount of articles that you could read for free before it locks you out of the site. But so in saying that, Brian, before we get into the worst and seeing who might be universally accepted as some of the worst free agent signings, we missed a guy. And I'm wondering, and I brought this up, I don't know if you get to hear the show that I did solo. It came up in the comment section. Joe Haden. Why didn't Joe Haden come to our mind? I mean, I have my reason. You may not have heard my reason, so I'm asking you. Is it just because he was, you know, a cut during training camp or at the end of training camp? Is that the reason why he's not thought of the same?
That's the exact reason.
Yeah.
And it's the only reason. That's, you know, yes, technically he's a free agent, but he's not a free agent that went into the free agent dance, so to speak, at the beginning of the free agency period. Didn't have all these different teams courting him. It was kind of like the Steelers were able to swoop in. Does that make it a bad free agent signing? No, but it's just, it's a little different, and one that I think technically falls outside of what we were talking about.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because he is a great free agent signing. He's definitely, there's no other semantics to it. He's a free agent, but it's kind of like it wasn't like you said, one of these guys that everybody was throwing money at, and the Steelers won the lottery. I don't even know if there was a lottery. Maybe they just threw the money at him right away. It was like 24 hours. It was the same day. It was like four hours later. I mean, there was literally no time. He was not on the market.
Not at all.
Cleveland, I don't know what time the league stuff goes through. Sometimes it's usually like 4 o'clock or the word goes through. That's probably what it was. The word was out, and it may not have been official that he was cut from the Browns right away. Maybe it had to be like 4 o'clock paperwork filing or whatever, and then the Steelers formally did everything, you know, a day or two later because of the, you know, whatever. But it was like instant, and it's another one of those signings too where, just like the Minkah Fitzpatrick trade, you're like, you know, I would really like this to happen. I don't think this is going to happen. And it does happen. It makes you happy. And especially when it turns out the way it has with Joe Hayden. So he gets an honorable mention, even if it is an asterisk for the way it kind of went down. It wasn't like a March signing or anything like that. One of the big name deal, like a Le'Veon Bell going out there with the sweepstakes. You know what I mean? It was, right. It was instant. It was like, oh, you almost picked up the phone and said, you know what? I know which guys would really tick them off if I called them and went there. you know, I assume he really wanted to play in Pittsburgh, obviously, if everything happened that quickly. And obviously Mike Tomlin and all the staff, front office, et cetera, must have had a tremendous amount of, what do you want to say, appreciation for him and his skills to bring him in that quickly. It's just, it's pretty amazing. Now, on the flip side, please stop with Jamal Adams. Just quit it. Just stop. It's another one we got to be like, stop. Okay, yeah. The Steelers, of course you could, it's like, let's create the all Madden team here. We're playing Madden football. Let's create the superstar all-star team like we always talk about. Money is not an objective, never, whatsoever. The guy wants to be paid $5 million more than the next highest, but the highest paid safety right now is Eddie Jackson. What's he making, like $14.5, $15 million in Chicago? Yeah. It's just the Steelers aren't going to break the bank like that. They will have money in the future, but when somebody brings something up like that, it's like, hey, guess who got a lot of money coming off the books? Well, that's also if you have Cam Hayward coming off the books, you're not trying to sign Juju to a long-term deal, do something with TJ Watt in the near future and things of that nature. So you're going to lose other pieces around that. And they still have Terrell Edmonds, who was a first-round pick. And no matter what you might want to say or think or whatever, they're not giving up on that guy just yet. He's only entering year three. You know, it's just it's preposterous. Especially when you look at Edmonds' contract versus what Adams, and I know some people are like, well, you can have Adams for just 1 year and really make this run, and then what does that really do for you when you have to decide on what you're going to do with Edmonds? I mean, it's not like they went out and drafted or signed safeties. If anything, it's probably the weakest depth position on the entire depth chart for the entire roster.
And let me just say something real quick about that, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due to one of our loyal listeners, a gentleman from down under, as they say, Peter Underwood. His daughter was one of the winners when we did our, you know, why do you deserve to get an autographed helmet, you know, promotion that we had done. And he just, you know, he's questioned in the past whether Terrell Edmonds was any good, and he said, sent me a DM on Twitter. It said, I just saw the interview with Minka on Game Pass this week. Very interesting to see the relationship he has with Edwins. One may get the glory, but the other is the rock. As per usual, he says, SCU is correct with its positive view of the Steelers. Edmonds is not a dud. He is a vital part of the defense. So I actually encourage anyone, if you haven't watched the interview on Game Pass, and you can watch the interview on Game Pass with Minka Fitzpatrick, do it. You'll learn something.
Well, not only that, there was only one mistake in that comment, Brian. He said, as usual. We're always right.
Well, I am anyway.
Yeah, well, I see how that works. Okay. I was already talking to you about timeliness and telling time like, well, I'm not going to go there anyways, but I said Brian tells time like a woman. Is 15 minutes is 2 hours sometimes. So for those of us men, hey, I think 98% of our demo is men, and I think the other 2% of the females that might listen to this, including Terry, one of our co-hosts, and Tina too, they'd probably get a chuckle out of that. So, but yeah, in this case, our wives were always right, right? So you can't always be right. That's where I was going with it.
No, I'm always right.
Oh, okay. You have her permission. You have her permission to say so then. So anyway,
let me just tell you it this way. My brother said, we all live in the world of happy wife, happy life. And you live in the world of giving zero Fs.
I love harvesting the memes that talk about that. It's like, here is the field where I grow all of these. It is barren. So, well, I guess barren. He could be on this list. He could, Mark Barron. I wouldn't put him on this list. I
wouldn't put him on there either, but he could be.
He got a nice deal from his agent. We'll just talk about him as first. I'm sure somebody would say the worst free agent signings. Oh, he was only here a year. He was an insurance policy in the event that they didn't get Devin Bush. They got Devin Bush. They put the young man out there. They're trying to see what their first round pick can do. Is he the real deal? Ends up playing very phenomenally. I think we forget there was a lot of hype about Devin Bush. All of a sudden, Minka came in and just, you know, he grabbed the baton and sprinted off with it, and you forgot, You forgot that the, you know, if it was a relay race, you forgot that Bush was fast because you had the Flash come in there and just, you know, an Usain Bolt and just blow by everybody the way Minka did with some of his flashy play. But yeah, Devin Bush had some crazy turnovers. I remember he got beat on one play. Was that against the Ravens? And then all of a sudden, like, he was in coverage downfield and caught like that unlikely interception, almost like against his helmet. And, you know, he scored. He had that one score. I think that was against the Chargers. The ball was loose. And that was a crazy game, too, because you had Minka, you had everybody involved in that one. And, you know, so more or less, I wouldn't put Mark Barron out there. Mark Barron actually played more snaps as the season went on, which is quite odd, as seeing that the only reason I think he's not in their plans for 2020 is just it's cost. It is being able to afford all the other things that are going on, particularly like Bud Dupree. Now, you know, when we get into some of these other signings, I guess we'll go back to what we were saying about having a universally accepted or unanimous decision. I really have a hard time with this one. A lot of people will say it's Ladarius Green. They'll say that the Steelers are still looking for tight ends. They tried to get somebody after Heath Miller. They went after Green. I think Green gets a lot of flack, and I don't know that he has controls over concussions or the injury that he had necessarily. I'm not always against the player just because they're hurt and they can't be on the field. I think more or less the only reason people really lambaste this guy. He couldn't get on the field, and he had a very rich contract. What was it, 4 years? $20 million, 4 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he lasted 1 year, and he hasn't been back in the league since. But when he was out there, and people will say, well, he played, six games? Well, he not really. There were only like two or three games where he was maybe 60, 70% participant. There were a lot of games where he played like just a couple of snaps, and they tried to get him involved in the game. And he had a really big game against the Giants where he caught 611 targets for 110 yards and a touchdown, and that's what we were kind of expecting to see. Another game, a couple other games, 67 yards, 72 yards, only that one touchdown though. They tried to get him involved on a 2-point conversion. That may have been against the Cowboys actually, where he was just kind of getting eased back in. He played, he was on injured reserve, so he had to come back from that, or maybe it was the pup list, whichever one. But he didn't play until the ninth game of the season, which was in November. He was out there, so that was week 10. And he was out there from weeks 10 through 15 in some type of capacity, and then wasn't around in the final weeks of the season and or the postseason. And I think that's why when you look at how much money, when the Steelers go after free agents and they don't go after very many, we were always talking about this, high-profile guys with the spotlight on them where everyone's trying to bid and throw money at them. When they land somebody like Green and it doesn't work out, I think that's the reason why people – have him as like universally the worst free agent signing of the Kevin Colbert era. Although I will disagree because there's somebody I dislike a lot more, but we'll be getting to that in a second.
Yeah, look, I kind of actually, you know, may fall down on the side of agreeing with this sentiment. And it's not a slight against Ladarius Green, and you know, injuries are injuries and you never know. It's the fact that they probably should have done better due diligence on this guy. You know, it's hard to tell. They knew he was dinged when they signed him, right? And they expected him to come back. Then he got, the foot injury or whatever it was. And then, of course, the concussion problems come in. And you know, I know that that's hard to detect, but you basically, you know, you have to weigh the risk-reward factor there. And a guy susceptible to concussions coming into a situation where you want him to be an over-the-middle guy who's going to start taking some big hits is a little risky. So I don't know. Not to mention the fact that, you know, he had a very, very, very limited field of work, you know, playing behind Antonio Gates in San Diego. So I kind of get where everybody's coming from. Do I think this is the one reach that they made that ended up, you know, really being a tough one? Yeah, at least for the moment. I kind of feel like it is. And look, the other part of this, and you, as you mentioned, is there's not a great sample size, right? And the reason I mean this is it's really hard to judge mediocre players on being the worst of the group when you're not saying, okay, these guys are all going to be studs. I know. Forgive me, Steelers fans. I know. The black and gold uniform makes them all instant Hall of Famers.
Absolutely.
I get it. But
first ballot, too.
Yeah, first ballot. And immediately, once they put that on, it's like kryptonite to all of their flaws, and they become perfect in all ways. But that being said, I don't actually believe that, and you're wrong. So the truth
that's because Brian's always right.
Exactly, I'm always right. This was a tough signing. It was a signing where I think they stretched a little bit based on what they hoped they were seeing and what was really a very strong need on the team. And it just didn't work out. It just did not work out at all. And, you know, the tally is in what the end result is. And the end result is they spent a lot of money and basically got, 304 yards and 18 catches. Not really a very good sign.
Well, what they really got was when people say, I pulled this up again, I keep the notes. I'm kind of like how our professor Zach Mickler is with the draft. I'm like that with regular season. I got the snap counts, Brian. I've got the notes here. So when he did come back, week 10, that Cowboys game was 12 snaps, 16% of the offensive plays, 8 the following week, 14, and then 35, which was only 48%. 28, which was 37%, and 43, which was 57%, and then he was gone. Weeks 16 and 17, a grand total of 140 snaps over 6 games, which would be 13% of the overall 1,083 snaps that the Steelers offense would have played in 2016. And furthermore, I wish I could probably figure this out too, but I probably won't get it right because I'm not exactly the greatest at math. Let's see here. So if he played 140 snaps out of a possible 420, even so, they were taking their sweet time easing him in. About a third of the he was only in a third of the game for the games he did play in. On average, even less if you count those first couple weeks where he came back. Then he played a little more, and then he wasn't around anymore. And that's why it makes it tough for me, because I don't know that he was necessarily like a big distraction or anything like that. The one that gets me is a lot of people put this one on their list. I think Ed Bouchette even had him on the list too. Yeah, he's a little further down. He was like his fifth overall one. J.Ry Miersma, so we may as well stick with the tight ends. And yeah. He came over from Buffalo. He was a seventh-round draft pick in 1996. He had 6 seasons with the Bills where he had 204 receptions for 2,304 yards. Now, mind you, that's over 6 seasons. That's not exactly lighting the world on fire by any means. And he had 20 touchdowns. It wasn't like you had all these guys flying around the field like you'd expect Ladarius Green or even Eric Ebron, probably the expectations this year. The way tight ends, you know, Gronk or Jimmy Graham, and you know, when he was in his prime playing in New Orleans with the Saints. So Miersma comes in. He comes in 2003. It's a 3-year deal for $4 million. That's actually probably that's a pretty tidy sum in 2003. We were even talking about Kent Graham getting what, like 5, 6, 7 million or something like that, and it being something big. So Miersma only he had 10 receptions for 138 yards and a touchdown, and then he only had 7 for 82 and 2 touchdowns the year after that. And then the Steelers went a different direction and drafted Heath Miller. So Miersma, I would put him higher on the list actually as a guy that probably a pretty comparable deal, 3 years for what was it I just said, $4 million back then. You know, it's a guy that comes over and was decently solid for the Bills and just wasn't very good for the Steelers.
I can't put him ahead of Ladarius Green.
Really?
Can't.
But he's out there. He's available. It wasn't like he was injured. The guy appeared in 22 of 24 possible games, and
it's what you said. He was dependable for the Bills. You're going to become an elite guy when you get here. Dependable for the Bills screams you're dependable, and I don't even care what era it is. It's the Jim Kelly era. It's still now you're dependable with a Hall of Fame quarterback. And the money is not equivalent. I can't put him ahead of him. Yes, was he bad signing? Absolutely, don't disagree. Well, can't put him ahead of Ladarius Green.
Well, it wasn't all Jim Kelly. There was Rob Johnson. There was Drew Bledsoe. They started to go into the quarterback purgatory at that point in time. The Bills and Greg Williams is their coach too. That last year that Ryan Miersma played there in 2002. But that's kind of my point too. Is that you brought it up? You brought up Antonio Gates and playing in the shadow of Antonio Gates, and maybe Green was good in that system, but he still had concussion problems and was largely unavailable at times as well. And it harkens back to, I think Jordan Reed got cut this offseason by the Redskins. Finally, he's one of the top paid tight ends, and he's always had concussion problems. And immediately I saw the social media. The usual, hey, go sign this guy. He'll be great for the Steelers. It's like, hey, he'll never – if you didn't like Ladarius Green, you don't want this guy. He's never going to get on the field. That's just the way it is with that. So for me, I mean, a guy that plays that many games – and Ladarius had probably as good as stats – hold on a second. Ladarius had 18 catches for 304 yards and a touchdown, okay, over the course of six games, and we just said it, 13% of total offensive snaps for that year. And Ryan Miersma had 17 catches, so he had more catches, more receptions, but less yards, 220 yards and three touchdowns. I don't know, man, over 22 games. I mean, it's just PU. They both stink. You can't get around that. For the money that was there and, bringing in somebody and – the Steelers usually never dipping their toe in the deep end of free agency. Yeah, I guess that's pretty bad too. Do we want to move? Do you want to hear my worst one, or should we go over to we've got a center and we've got a kicker.
Well, I got a guy who I think maybe is your worst one. I don't know, but would have been my worst one. And still, there's still a part of me that ranks him as the worst one. In many ways, so I'm willing to follow where you lead, my friend.
Well, I don't know. You brought up Scooby-Doo. I think Scooby-Doo was a trade, and we always talk about that too. The Steelers had some problems with kickers, sometimes self-inflicted, I think. So when Sweetum got hurt, they tried to bring in Garrett Harley. Garrett Harley gets hurt too, and then they go and they trade for Josh Scobie, who I think we had a March Madness tournament several years ago. It was the Steelers who marched us to madness. And I believe it was between him and Brandon Boykin that were the two. Maybe it would have been my other guy, who I will bring up in a little bit. But here's Todd Peterson. Here's a guy where the Steelers, if you remember Chris Brown, they didn't sign Chris Brown. They didn't match, or they didn't at least match a restricted tender. So Chris Brown goes to the Houston Texans. The Steelers signed Peterson to 4 years, nearly $4 million. The same ballpark as Ryan Miersma, actually. And he made just 12 of 21 field goal tries in 10 games before they cut him. And that made way for Jeff Reed. So, for better or worse there, right? Our buddy Jeff Reed won a lot of games off his foot and also, brought a lot of attention upon himself at different times. Way different guy now, obviously. Maybe even a different guy then and just misunderstood. But anyhow, Peterson had claimed that he was hurt, and he jumped around to a couple other teams, as kickers do. They have a very short lifespan. The other guy was we were talking about Jeff Hardings as one of the better signings and bridging that gap from the Mike Websters, Jermoni Dawsons, Jeff Hardings, and then you go with Sean Mahan, who did not convert over very well to become a center. He was traded back to Tampa, but he got a 5-year, $17 million contract. And that's a really rich contract, and that's when the Steelers they started to move in a different direction. Eventually, Marquise Pouncey becoming the steady guy there to dot the I on the line. So that's almost all of the five that Ed had. I still have one more, but I'll let you opine on Peterson and Mahan. or not.
I mean, what is there really to say about Peterson? It is what it is. You start to get into the range of guys where I go, okay, from three on, it's just a tie ad infinitum. because, I didn't expect them to be all that great to begin with. And when they disappoint, they sort of all disappointed equally. Mahan, though, we kind of hope for more. Again, this is a team that has been a very good judge of center play and has had very, very center play that has been at such a high level for so long that that, you know, you really just expect it. Now, is that fair of to someone like Sean Mahan? Probably not. So is he also being judged at a level that may be too high for him? Very possibly. But, you know, to say that he was adequate is probably not fair. So, yes, it's a bad signing. Again, I can't place either one of them at the level of what I consider the Ladarius Green signing to be, or this other guy that I haven't talked about yet.
Well, I'm trying to think if I want to get over to that guy just right now. I mean, it's such a – I still really strongly dislike what he did to this team, and that's LeGarrette Blount. That's my guy. I could put him at the top of the list because, you know what, he really – was that your guy?
No, it's not my guy.
Oh, it's not your guy.
He's like, if these guys are 1A and 1B, he'd be 1C.
Okay. Well, I could I'm interested because you got me thinking here. I think I know who you may talk about. I will not blurt out any other names, but LeGarrette Blount comes by way of, obviously, he was in Tampa, then he was with the Patriots, and, you know, he did – I never thought, like, when he was signed that he was going to be like this – you know, amazing player, but at the same time, pairing him with Bell, maybe Bell doesn't have to carry the ball as much, not the same wear and tear and the pounding and everything like that. So they got another guy here that can hammer the ball into the end zone. Maybe he could be like another Bus or Bam Morris or somebody, one of these power backs that you're used to, you know, in your memory. Here's a guy that was here for, what, 11 games before he was pouting during a record day for Le'Veon Bell, which maybe he felt Bell had done enough. He had certainly had a record day. I was against the Titans, I believe. And here you go. He doesn't get in the game. Like, I don't even think maybe he got like one carry and he leaves the locker room and goes to the team bus like during the game or at the end of the game or whatever and ends up getting cut. And that the reason it irks me so much is not only that and pouting your way off the team, but then he goes to New England, who scoops him up right away. Like, they were struggling for a running back. Their running backs were hurt. They didn't have anybody that was worth a flip. And all of a sudden, he goes up there and helps them go to another championship, you know. That made me not only ill, but the fact of the matter was Bell then gets hurt. And then everybody, like, tends to think, well, this front office, they don't ever do anything right. They should have planned for this. Well, they did plan for it, but they didn't plan for the other guy to be a complete jackass and quit on the team. And that's the thing that really bothered me with LeGarrette Blount. He quit, and he quit because he wanted to be somewhere else. He didn't like whatever the deal was in Pittsburgh. Maybe his role was diminished or it wasn't what they had planned. But it's still, there's no I in team. You know, there is a me and team, and the Steelers don't believe in that. You know what I mean? So yep. He hurt the Steelers because is this the season where they end up picking up Ben Tate and losing to the Ravens? I do believe 2014. Hold on. I'm looking at this. This was – I'm looking it up right now. The Steelers were 11-5. And yeah, and they lose to the Ravens. That's right, because the game was played in January 3rd, 2015. They lose at home to the Ravens. They have to pick up a guy that he could be the worst, but it doesn't really count when you only play like one game. Ben Tate, if people remember him. And he was largely responsible for two of the Steelers' turnovers because he was missing blocks, he fumbled, and it was ugly, and it was all because Bell got hurt in the final game and wasn't available for that playoff game, and then you lose to your nemesis, the Baltimore Ravens, at home at Heinz Field after having a very solid season, one in which Ben had this was the year Ben threw for like a bunch of yards, wasn't it? It was the big year where he had like the 500-yard games, almost 5,000 yards passing, et cetera, and it just all fell apart in that first game because they couldn't run the ball between Ben Tate and Josh Harris. And it's all because LeGarrette Blount quit on the team. And is there a due diligence or whatever you can do in that? What can you do in that situation as a front office? It just makes it a bad signing because the player ended up turning out bad for the team. Not necessarily any fault, I think, of anyone like Kevin Colbert, Mike Tomlin, et cetera.
I will beg to differ on that statement. I don't call this the worst free agent signing. I call it the dumbest free agent signing. And here's why I say that. If you look at LeGarrette Blount and his career from college and up, you knew this guy was a knucklehead. Yeah, he's a knucklehead.
True. Yep.
Complete and total knucklehead and a self-centered, self-absorbed, selfish player. There's no question about it. And the reason that I can't I can't equate this to a bad free agent signing in the sense of expectations versus what you got, is because you got exactly what you should have expected. And the flaw here is that whether he pulled the wool over Tomlin and Colbert's eyes, whether they just went, well, it's the best of what's out there and we'll see if we could, or whether they went, you know what? We've been living with Antonio Brown for X number of years and we figured out how to deal with his crazy ass. Maybe we can deal with this guy. I don't know what the reasoning behind it was, but they were wrong. They could not contain the self-indulgent ego of Mr. LeGarrette Blount. And, you know, it just was exactly what I expected to happen from the get-go. So that's where I can't go. But, you know, it's still a bad signing, and I rank it above many of the other ones because at least this is a guy who had some capabilities, right? He could have been the right kind of stopgap when Spell got hurt. He had the potential to at least be a contributor. And so it ends up being bad because you sign him, you get nothing out of him, and he goes to one of the people that you hate the most and helps them win. But it's not a bad judge of his capabilities. It's really a bad judgment on his character or the belief, the false belief that because you could already handle one crazy nutball, you could handle two of them. I don't know. Again, I don't know what it was, but I just didn't ever expect that union to end well, and it didn't.
Well, you know what? I totally agree with you on some of that. You know, I at least expect a player. I think he was a 2-year deal. I expect them to like fulfill their contract, not just quit on the team. I mean, that's what sucks, and that's what makes it. Everything you said is true as well. So he just really sticks. You know, it's a sore spot with me just because of how that turned out. Versus like Green, who was, you know, I feel sorry for the guy that he got hurt, and I feel bad that the Steelers went to invest all this money in him as well, and could tied up some funds they could have done some other things with maybe that year. But anyway, yeah, I want to hear who your guy is, because I may have a few honorable mentions to toss in here as well. All depending, there are a couple guys that may be outside of this Kevin Colbert era, but let's hear who you have.
All right, the guy that I have is he may be benefiting from the most recent bad taste in my mouth as to why, and also because I had much higher hopes than I probably did for most other folks and thought this was going to work out. Instead, what you got initially was a guy who made Ike Taylor look like he could catch the ball at a Hall of Fame level. Instead, what you got is a guy who let balls bounce off his chest and be intercepted. That would be one Dante Moncrief.
Okay.
And it's not that they overspent on him. I mean, it was, what, a $9 million contract for 2 years or something like that? I don't remember.
It was like eight and change. Yeah. You're in the ballpark.
And it's not that they overspent. It's that there was so much hype. And he looked so good in training camp. Mm. And then the games came and he sucked so bad. the phrase that he sucked, it's not even sucked bad. He sucked hard. He sucked so hard that it was unbelievable. I'm sure this just got into his head. And once it was there, it's like Cortez Allen or many of these other players, he was just done. And I could be wrong, but I don't think you've seen him again anywhere. He may have signed with a team, but I don't think he's gotten on the field.
Panthers.
Yeah. Did he get playing time?
I don't think he did, and he may have even been cut. I'm going to go find that info for you right now. Because let's see, Carolina, 3 games. They never threw him the ball, but apparently he must have dressed. So there wasn't much. I didn't, you know, I had large expectations. Maybe larger expectations seeing him in camp versus the actual signing, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not about value versus signing, because I still think Ladarius Green ends up taking the cake for that. But it is about expectations versus what you got. And, you know, like I had a little more muted expectations for Ladarius Green simply because I thought his sample size wasn't there. And I may have overblown my expectations for Dante Moncrief because of seeing some of what he did in training camp. And because it was such a 180-degree turn from what he was doing in camp, you know, he made Justin Hunter look good. And that's impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I knew you were going there as soon as you said someone who couldn't catch the ball. And that's another one that's unfortunate because I really don't know if he, like, busted his hand or whatever. What are you supposed to do? Come out and say, yeah, I broke these fingers like Sammy Coates, and then you're in wide receiver purgatory for the rest of your career because nobody's ever going to think you're going to heal or catch the ball. I mean, you've got to be able to catch the ball to play wide receiver, right? So now, yes. If everybody doesn't know if you just suck or if you're hurt, one or the other, and you got to be able to, you either got to sit and rest, which is never a good thing because somebody's going to take your spot. Or it's like, I hate saying wide receivers dime a dozen because we know that's not true. Being in Pittsburgh, we're spoiled by a lot of great wide receivers, but the truth of the matter is there are so many of them that somebody else can easily slide in and take your spot, and particularly if they happen to do well or get an opportunity. And, you know, I was looking at some of these. I had some other names that were honorable mentions in here, Brian. One is a wide receiver who did not do well also that I may as well throw in here. And we also have a safety we should probably toss in too. Let's toss Morgan Burnett out there real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Because Morgan Burnett's a guy, now again, somebody who got hurt, but he was expected to start, not Terrell Edmonds, and he would have still been with the team last year. I think it was a 2 or 3 year deal initially. And then he lost his spot because he was unhealthy, exactly this scenario I was just laying out here. And then he cried his way and complained his way into getting released. And then he went and played in Cleveland and got hurt some more, and I'm pretty sure he's homeless right now as far as a team. And I know he's probably north of 30 right now, but he was great, and he played like multiple positions for the Packers. And I have some friends that are Packers fans. They said, you're going to really love him as long as he could stay on the field. And I remember hearing that with Browns fans with Joe Hayden too. So you see, you can't just be like, well, they pick up these bums that are hurt or whatever. You're trying to make an educated guess and a risk factor, and Joe Hayden, in his case, worked out. Morgan Burnett did not work out. You know who else didn't work out since we were on wide receivers? Lance Moore.
No, he did not.
And Lance Moore is a guy who lost the spot too because of other guys coming in and whatnot. And he was hurt and couldn't get out there and play. And he was kind of like the safety valve. He was kind of like a Wes Welker type player for Drew Brees when he was with the Saints. He was that slot receiver type. And there's a guy I remember, the Steelers were miserably losing a game in Cleveland. They had Big Ben. It's one of the few times that Ben has lost, not only to the Browns, but up in Cleveland. And they finally get on the board, and the touchdown pass goes to who? Lance Moore. And he goes, and he spikes the ball, and he's celebrating like some idiot that just, you know, won the Super Bowl. And it's like, dude, we're down like 24 points, man. Like, have a little humility. Just hold on to the ball, and if you're that happy about it, go and put it in the case on the sidelines, and somebody will put it in like the nice glass case, and you could have it signed and whatever. It, like, just stupid. Like, I don't want to get into a rant on celebrations. I actually do like that they eased up on all the celebration stuff. I do like it, yes. But. When you're down and you're getting your butt kicked and you're getting it handed to you, that's not a time to celebrate. Whether you get something choreographed or in your back pocket again, maybe Lance did it because he just knew he was never going to touch the ball again, which is kind of my educated guess.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. Look, for whatever reason, the rapport just didn't exist, whether it's because, you know, differences in how Ben played versus how somebody like Drew Brees played. If it's just that he never got acclimated to the system well enough, it just never really worked with Lance Moore. And, you know, maybe he just dropped off the edge of his talent pool at that point. Because, again, it's not a guy I remember leaving here and going on and being massively successful somewhere else. You know, this was a free agent that you thought, okay, when he played in New Orleans, he was decent. We hope he'll be decent here, and he wasn't. But I don't think afterwards he was that great anywhere else. I don't. Again, I'm I'm too lazy. You can look it up. I don't want to go look up what he did after he left here. But I just can't imagine it was much of anything.
No, it wasn't much of anything. And in fact, the reason Lance Moore even shows up on this list is because Jericho Cotri had left after scoring those 10 touchdowns and went to Carolina. So you're expecting this guy to maybe pop in here and pick up some of that slack or some of that production that was going away. And he didn't. More or less, it was his next to last season in the NFL. I guess he dressed for 14 games. He started two. He caught all of 14 passes for 198 yards and two touchdowns. So didn't do much of anything. He went up to Detroit and had a little bit better of a season, but he caught like double that, you know, 29 for 337 and four touchdowns. So his production, you know, kind of started to fall off a cliff. He had a 1,000-yard and a near 1,000-yard season more than once with the New Orleans Saints. Kevin Colbert, you know, he's been around since 2000, Brian. There's a lot of other names that could go on here. I actually slipped and let one go earlier, and I think he has to go on this list. And I don't know why he wouldn't be on this list, to be completely honest. Here it was. It was February 2000. Kent Graham signed by the Pittsburgh Steelers on a $5.1 million deal over 3 years to replace Mike Tomczak, who had been released in the offseason, and as the backup for Cordell Stewart. In the wake of Stewart, who was having to cope with drastic changes to the offensive team members, his 99 season was mediocre, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, Bill Cowher made Kent Graham the starting quarterback, and that was a pretty big to-do, bringing in somebody like that as a free agent. The Steelers were still trying to find their quarterback that they hadn't had, you know, this entire time. We talked about NO14 and guys like that in these past episodes, but Kent Graham is a guy, I mean, they brought in that – I think they brought him in to be the man, right? You don't sign a free agent quarterback for 3 years – and then have him and make him the starter, and then he was gone. Basically, he just was not good. He went 2-3 as a starter, the 44.6% completion percentage, 878 yards with a TD and a pick over those 5 games, 1 touchdown, 1 pick, couldn't complete even half of his passes. That's pretty miserable if you're asking me as far as a free agent signing.
Here, this is what I want to give you. I'm going to give you a set of, I don't know what, 8 numbers. 36, minus 3, 11, 87, 23, 138, 132. That's not good numbers that I really wanted to give you. They're the wrong numbers. Those are his rushing numbers. So I kind of screwed that up.
Wait, he ran for 100 yards?
132 for a season.
Okay.
A season.
I was going to say, man, I don't remember.
I'm trying to find the yards.
Lamar Graham playing for this team.
Yeah, no, actually, I might be right. That is rushing yards. What the heck is that? I'm looking at the wrong chart. Okay, so here's what I'm trying to find. The point I was going for with Mr. Graham here is, I don't think, you know, he played with the Giants and the Cardinals. First the Giants, then the Cardinals, then the Giants again. You look at it, he never had a season over, 1,600 yards?
Yeah.
1,697 is the max that he had, and that was the year before. What were you really expecting?
people fall in love with guys like this.
How many times have I said this to you in both the back rooms and on the air? People are stupid.
Nick Foles. Was it Mike Flynn, the guy that was the backup for Aaron Rodgers that went to Seattle and then didn't even win? Man, Pete Carroll's such a genius for going with Russell Wilson, not only drafting him, but they threw so much money at that guy, and then he didn't even come out of camp as the starter. And there are so many other countless examples like that. People were throwing money at Chase Daniel not too long ago. People wanted A.J. McCarron. Who else were we talking about? God, the guy, he was with the Raiders and then he was in the XFL this year. I can't even remember his name. He couldn't even start with the XFL. But it's like there's this, people are enamored. They think that everyone's going to step out of like the shadow of another quarterback as the backup, and they've been sitting there being groomed, like a Jimmy Garoppolo, for example, in Tom Brady's shadow. And it doesn't always work like that. It almost never works like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this is what I will make this as a definitive statement. people with a capital P, meaning people who engage in groupthink and allow themselves to have their decisions dictated by the opinions of others or the masses, are stupid. People with a capital P are stupid. Individuals who determine their own decisions by looking up the facts and making a determination based on what is can be smart. Can be. They're not always. Sometimes they're stupid too. But people are stupid. And what they do is exactly what you said. They start to hear things. I heard good things about this guy. Where'd you hear him from? And if you say Twitter, just throw it away.
Don't pick it up.
If you say Facebook, it's even worse. You know, whatever it is, you know, where, go look it up yourself. What could you possibly have expected from Kent Graham? What had he ever done in his career to make anyone think this guy is the guy to take us back to glory?
Well,
nothing.
He had nothing compared to the other two Giants quarterbacks he had played with when he returned there in 98 and 99. He had actually had a winning record compared to Danny Cannell and Kerry Collins. So I guess you're at least looking at somebody who had that was winning games and had some sort of experience in the NFL. I mean, he had 59%.
You might need to edit my next comment.
Don't swear.
I'm not going to swear, but, you know, come on. Kerry Collins was drunk 90% of the time. So
I think he admitted to that, too.
Yes, exactly. He was, you know, so he outperformed a guy who was, you know, walking down drunk. Okay.
Well, I do have one more, Brian, and this is one that surprises me that doesn't show up. Maybe it's because maybe we like the guy. Maybe we have a better memory of things he did elsewhere. But he did come to the Steelers, lifelong Steelers fan, signed a huge deal. Huge. Maybe 5 years, $14 million back in 2004 to be the man. This is 5 years, $14 million, to be the man to replace Jerome Bettis. He had run for over 1,000 yards in three of his seven seasons with the Philadelphia Eagles, the one, the only, Deuce Staley. I had high expectations for that for that signing, and just it didn't. It was all right. The first year he comes in 2004, he plays 10 games because he was hurt. Probably could have been a 1,000-yard rusher if he wasn't. Didn't have the touchdowns because the bus was still there. And Jerome was getting all the goal line stuff. But when he couldn't get on the field the next year, that's when Fast Willie Parker arrived on the scene. And I think Willie, it's another one of those things where that window of opportunity opens up and he sees the moment. And it even has a Super Bowl memory, you know, to go along with that, some Super Bowl memories. So, yeah, Deuce Staley, I mean, you think about that, man, five years, $14 million. That's not exactly chump change back in. We were just talking about 2004. The Steelers, Kevin Colbert was quite active back then. It's kind of surprising to see that he had some of the signings that we'd already talked about, like Jay Riemersma, Sean Mahan, Deuce Staley. And then at the same time, within those years, he's using his first-round draft picks on guys like Troy Polamalu, Heath Miller, Ben Roethlisberger. So really kind of a mixed bag. I wonder what social media would have said about Kevin Colbert right about, you know, early 2000s and seeing, what is this guy doing? You know what I mean? Kent Graham and things of that nature. But, you know, unfortunately for Deuce, he just couldn't stay healthy, and he eventually ended up just retiring. And now as a coach, and you know what? What is he? Is he a coordinator now too? He may
I don't remember.
I'm looking. He's assistant head coach. That's what he is with the Eagles since Doug Peterson had gone in there. So he gets a lot of praise for some of that. But he's been with the Eagles organization for like 10 years or going on almost 10 years now in a coaching capacity. So he still has his imprint on the league. And, you know, he had a lot of experience. He was darn good with the Eagles. And maybe even – I didn't even look. But was he a Pro Bowl guy? No, he never actually got the nod for a Pro Bowl. But he was always somebody that was up there or in the conversation as some of the best backs in the league when he was younger, just never really worked out for the Steelers.
Yeah, this is one that when you want to say the injury, I don't want to fault the player because of the injury, because it's a hamstring injury that Deuce got, and it just lingered. He probably tried to come back from it too soon. But you got to remember that after the first seven games of that season, he was the fifth best running back in the league.
Yeah.
But the problem is then he misses four games with the hamstring, comes back, re-injures the same hamstring, is never the same guy again. I don't look at this. This is one where I go, all right, that's an injury that could happen to anybody at any time, and that's just the breaks of the game, right? It's not like he had a history of hamstring injuries. And I think, at least I don't think he did. Maybe I'd have to go back and look, but I don't believe that was the case. And if that's the situation, then you look at this, does it turn, end result is bad signing because the player certainly didn't produce the value for what you invested in him. But is it Colbert's fault that that's a bad signing? I don't think so. I think it actually looked pretty damn good after those first seven games.
Yeah.
And then down the road, it doesn't pan out. And yeah, the structure of that contract and maybe the fact that they didn't give themselves any loopholes to get out of it. And maybe that is part of why when Le'Veon Bell says, I want to be the highest paid running back in the world and you're going to have to give me $20 million, and the Steelers went, I don't think so. they remember how easily running backs' careers end.
Yeah.
And what has happened in the past. I look at it and you go, there's a couple of just fluky things that occur there, the injury and then the emergence of Willie Parker, who, comes in and is just lightning in a bottle. And, then they ran his wheels off and that was it. So I guess it ranks as a bad signing, but I'm willing to say this is an unlucky signing more than it's a bad signing.
Yeah, unlucky or like one that doesn't work out. I'm just surprised it doesn't show up more in these worst of. Maybe it was just because you feel that one guy had done so much worse, like a Todd Peterson, for example.
Yes.
Todd Peterson could even be higher up there than I know Ladarius Green. It's the 1 year. Maybe it's just because I did pay attention to Ladarius Green and his career with the Chargers and thought that he would have worked out better and he at least flashed something. It's tough when you're looking at, like, what did I say, 130 or 140 snaps, like 13%. Like, the guy didn't play hardly at all and he was hurt. And he only had 1 year. They tried to stick with Deuce. Deuce at least got a ring. He got a ring. He was on the roster. But unfortunately, he wasn't playing. I even remember going that far back, Brian. I remember they were selling his jerseys when he was signed. The Deuce Staley jerseys. I mean, it was and people were wearing them. Now you can find them in the strip district sitting next to guys like Eric Pegram and stuff like that. We mentioned Eric Pegram the other day. That's right. Yep. But you'll find stuff like that. It's sad. It's sad the way it was. It ended up turning out. And, I don't know. I guess you can make a case for several of these guys. I guess the one big thing is when you're talking about this and you're talking about injuries and everything like that, it isn't necessarily a situation where the Steelers really go out and get somebody and then they absolutely fall off a cliff and are just no good. I mean, how many guys – we talked about NO14 making Larry Brown a rich man from that Super Bowl. And what did he really do after that? Or I remember Alvin Harper coming from the Cowboys.
Ripped off the Jets. That's what he did.
Who hasn't? Who hasn't? Is it always the Jets?
Who hasn't made the Jets look stupid?
This show has – our show here is consistently – found ways to make fun of the New York Jets and it's unintentional. We bring up somebody else's name and we go and we look up their career and we're like, oh yeah, we forgot he had a year with the Jets. Even Brett Favre went to the Jets and then left and ended up in the NFC title game.
Let's not forget what he did when he was with the Jets. I won't bring it up because it's a family show, but
yes,
something about New York, man.
The Big Apple. You know, I brought up a name. I'm bringing up a name that falls into that category. Remember when Andre Rison was going to be the man for the Cleveland Browns?
Yeah.
And I mean, he had had these seasons were just his rookie year. Well, he was with the Colts, so he had 820 yards, but he went to the Falcons. He had four straight seasons out of five where he was either a Pro Bowl and he was also an All Pro his second year in the league. And he's 27 years of age, 1994. He finishes with the Falcons with 81 receptions. He had 1,088 yards, eight touchdowns, which was actually down from what he had had the other 4 years with the Falcons. He had 10 touchdowns, 12 touchdowns, 11 touchdowns, and 15 touchdowns in 1993. 1995, he turns around and gets a nice three touchdowns for the Browns with his 47 catches, 701 yards. And everybody says, well, he was just an overpriced decoy or however they tried to play that off. And then he bounced around the league and you know, ended up playing until 2000 somehow. And those are the type of signings that I don't think the Steelers have necessarily had, that where they've I mentioned Elvin Harper getting by association of playing with those Cowboys championship teams, he signed a really rich contract, went to like Tampa Bay and disappeared. And you have guys that are like that every so often, where it's either you're either taking the opportunity to be with a winning team franchise, win a ring, or you're trying to make bank. You know what I mean? And I guess sometimes it works out both ways. Sometimes it doesn't work out anyway. And I guess the Steelers have largely, for the most part, avoided that, because even while we're talking about this, when's the last time that they've had an actual below 500 losing season? 02, 03? It's been a long time. So even when they do make bad free agent signings, it could be much worse when you look around the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I guess what they could have given Kirk Cousins $96 million guaranteed or whatever it was to what? Win nothing?
Well, Dak Prescott.
And then
Dak Prescott
doubled down on it by giving him a $66 million extension. So, you know, there's a guy. He'll have made more money than a lot of quarterbacks make in their career. And it's not that he's bad. But that tells you how overpriced quarterbacks are.
He's in Major League Baseball territory.
Yeah, it's crazy. But be that as it may, the Steelers, look, they're not playing at the level of in free agency. They're not playing on those upper echelons. They're not trying to get those guys. And why? Because they don't need those guys. No, they're more than content to draft well, which they do, and to then groom their own guys, because it's a proven formula for success. That's how you win. Building these super teams doesn't win you championships, and it never has. So, you know, if you can find one championship won by one of these so-called super teams, that's probably the only one you're going to find, and I can't even think of one. But, you know, that's so they have their formula. They're going to go about it the right way, which means the free agents they get are always complementary pieces. They're either going to work or they're not. And there's always a higher level of risk with guys that are second tier free agents. It's just the fact of the matter. The fact that they've hit as many times as they have speaks again to the quality of their scouting department.
Well, the reason we were talking some backroom stuff was the Dak Prescott $31 million tag, and that's by virtue of everyone throwing more money at quarterbacks.
Yep.
You got to throw money at them to keep them, and it's become a very high-priced position around the league, and you got many young guys that are up for new contract or will be up for contracts in the coming years. Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, those guys are going to break the bank. I mean, even Baker Mayfield's probably going to fetch something, even if he does nothing more than he already has. And that's the reason why you got guys like Kirk Cousins. When a lot of people are like, well, what has Dak done? What have the Cowboys done? And you look at Kirk Cousins, who is he's made $130 million so far. He has potential to make $196.5 million by the time his contracts are all done. And $189 of that, Brian, is guaranteed. That's more guaranteed money than Ben has had for his entire career. Ben has only been guaranteed $113 over all of his contracts, and Ben's average per year is 15.7, and Cousins has already superseded that with 16.3. And I'm sure if I look up someone like Matthew Stafford, he's probably in that ballpark too. At least Matt Ryan has played in the Super Bowl, and you can maybe make some case for that. But and Joe Flacco's made a lot of money too. It's just, I mean, you could name so many guys. If you're like in the top 20, maybe you're getting paid a pretty good sum, and the rest of the teams are still trying to find that guy that's going to lead the team and be that top quarterback. They're looking for that Kent Graham that's going to be the diamond in the rough. So Yeah, but anyways, yeah, Kirk Cousins, $96 million, just phew, that's just a lot of money, and that's the direction it's going to keep going and growing. So, my friend, it was fun talking to you. I know we're up against it. Got a little bit longer of a show than what I tried to throw together by myself, but I'm only so long-winded here or there, and I had to cut that one short, and I just didn't want to yak everyone's ear off saying the same thing over and over. But I think we unearthed some maybe obvious names, some ones we had forgotten about. It's going to be interesting to see if somebody comes up with some others maybe in the comment section that we glossed over, so don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And Brian, thanks once again for joining not only me, but all the listeners out there today.
Happy to not be so swamped with things to do that I couldn't jump on and talk some Steelers football.
Always great to talk Steelers football. We may be getting some camp stuff coming up soon too, and there's a lot of hoopla, Brian. Matt Filer, Mike Tomlin said Matt Filer, he's going to start camp as a left guard, and Tyson Alualu is a nose tackle, although that's not very surprising at all.
What did I say about Tyson Alualu just the other day?
Yeah, he sneaks into maybe one of those better free agent ones. If he signs another contract and plays into his mid-30s and is still every bit as good as he has been, he's definitely going to be in that conversation for sure. So, but Filer absolutely. Only – you know why Filer surprised me? They didn't say he was playing right tackle. Ooh.
No.
So maybe Stefan
Wisniewski. Chooks.
Stefan Wisniewski. Stefan Wisniewski, free agent signing.
Could be the Hulk, too.
Yeah, could be. Banner.
Could be Zach the Hulk Banner.
I like that, the Hulk. That's a pretty good one. But anyways, I digress. We're up against it. Thanks for joining me. My name's Joe. His name's Brian. And until next time, we encourage everyone out there to be safe, be good, and we'll catch you later.
We would like to thank you for listening and remind our listeners to follow us on social media and our website, www.steelcityunderground.com.